ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय यरयाम मुमुचुस्थोयाम कच्चिन्ना मुमुचु शिवम यथा ज्ञानामृतं काले ज्ञानिनो दधते नवा गिरया मुमुचुस्थोयम् कच्चिन्ना मुमुचु शिवम् यथा ज्ञानामृतं काले ज्ञानिनो दधते नवा गिरयो मुमुचुस्थोयम् कचिन्ना मुमुचु शिवम् Kvachinna mumuchu shivam Yata gyanamritam kale Gyanino dadate nava Giriyo mumuchu stoyam Kvachinna mumuchu shivam Yata gyanamritam kale Gyanino dadate nava Girayaha The mountains Mumuchuhu Released Toyam Their water Kvachit Sometimes Na mumuchuhu They did not release Shivam pure Yatha just as Jnana of transcendental knowledge Amritam the nectar Kali at the appropriate time Jnaninaha Experts in spiritual knowledge. Da 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 te bestow. Na va or not. Translation during the season, during this season, the mountains sometimes released their pure water and sometimes did not. Just as experts in transcendental science sometimes give the nectar of transcendental knowledge and sometimes do not. Purport. The first part of this chapter describes the rainy season and the second part has been dealing with the autumn season, which begins when the rain stops. During the rainy season, water always flows from the mountains. But during the autumn, the water sometimes flows and sometimes does not. Similarly, great saintly teachers sometimes speak expansively on spiritual knowledge and sometimes they are silent. The self-realized soul is closely in touch with the Supreme Soul and according to his desires, a competent spiritual scientist may or may not describe the absolute truth depending on the specific circumstances. When I first read this purport, what? But it's at the same time, on the other hand, it's natural that depending upon circumstances, one will speak or not speak. I mean, specifically it says remain silent. And as we discussed yesterday, negation, no desire or no form, here it's don't speak. It means don't speak transcendental knowledge. Don't speak the knowledge of the absolute truth. Not necessarily literally mona. And it's true that sometimes transcendentalists, the commentary speaks of both jnanis and devotees that are replete with knowledge, sometimes and sometimes. Sometimes they speak depending upon the audience and the circumstance. And sometimes not about specifically about the absolute truth. I was thinking of Sally Agarwal's appreciation of Prabhupada during the time that he spent at their home in Butler, Pennsylvania. And she expressed very appreciatively that Swamiji never made us feel uncomfortable. You know, she is specifically, here's an American lady married to an Indian gentleman who obviously was not like a Pukka Vaishnava or anything like that. But she was apprehensive. What's it going to be like having a sannyasi sadhu in our home? You know, whatever her understanding of what that meant. She was anticipating probably some discomfort, but her appreciation was Prabhupada never made her feel uncomfortable. And he would speak on many topics. He would ask questions of this and that. And eventually the topic would come back to Krishna. But it was done in such a way that she was not uncomfortable. That's challenging to make people not feel uncomfortable when the topic drifts to Krishna. And apparently that happened pretty quickly. The topic drifted to Krishna. But he was interested in, he would inquire from her about all kinds of things, the worldly things of her life. And then slowly or expertly at least, bring the conversation to transcendence. So similarly, when we're moving about, we may extend cordiality, something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about specifically in Nectar of Instruction is Bhakti Loka about householders, because he was a householder, and how householders can not violate the principle that destroys bhakti, the one that says associating with worldly-minded persons. So his comment is that householders having occupation, they have to perform their occupation. But so in that place, in the workplace, there are worldly-minded people. So it looks like a violation of a prohibition of Rupa Goswami. And he explains that social, he doesn't use this language, but social cordialities, that's just fine. Hello, how are you? How's everything? How's the family? And for purpose of cordial dealings, that's not giving transcendental knowledge to a person that's unwilling to hear transcendental knowledge. That's not a transgression of giving something, placing something before a person who's going to offend. Krishna, like the biblical saying, don't cast pearls before swine. So persons that don't have interest in transcendental knowledge, we don't hit them over the head with it. So there's a matter of discretion, and it's not always easy to have that refined discretion, when to say, when not to say, how much to say, and so forth. It's delicate. And, of course, there's different persons who have different approach to, you know, where's the line that you don't cross, where's the line that's okay. Now, some people, I'm thinking of one person in particular. Well, I think I can say it. Hari Shyam. Jai Jagannath told me that time he first met you when you came to the temple. Is it okay to say that exchange? He came to the temple saying he wanted to have some puja for his car or motorbike or something, car. And Jai Jagannath happened to be the one that received, and he roasted him. I mean, that wasn't Jai Jagannath's words, but he let you have it, like, you know, what kind of nonsense is this? Etc. So, and when Jai Jagannath was narrating this, I was thinking, gosh, I would never do that. The first time somebody comes to the temple, just blast him. Nonsense. Why are you doing karmakanda with your car? For God's sake, what's wrong with you? And so, it's, you know, different individuals have different boundaries or lines that they don't cross. And some persons are more liberal and some persons are more conservative. Each of us has our nature that's beautiful, perfectly natural. However, intelligence does say we make some distinctions between when and when not. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he refers to Narada, Judd Bharat, and Prahlad. These are transcendentalists. Judd Bharata, obviously, he didn't say nothing to nobody. He was mum. He didn't give transcendental knowledge except something he saw within Rahugana indicated, I'm going to give him transcendental knowledge. So he gave him transcendental knowledge. And then transcendental knowledge and transcendental knowledge and transcendental knowledge and transcendental knowledge. He overwhelmed him. Now, something about Rahugana said, although he was proud, and in bodily conception of life, he spoke. Then others he just didn't speak to. And Vishwanath says, Narada spoke to Magari. Of course, Narada's Narada. Narada knows exactly how to speak to anybody. We hear Narada's exchange with Valmiki before he was Valmiki. He was a dacoit. And, he expertly showed the dacoit the plight that he had created for himself by his business, his dacoit business. But he didn't give a whole lot of transcendental knowledge, just, you're going to suffer, so here's this mantra. Anyway, so in different cases, Narada will say different things. But it's not always the full-on transcendental message. Narada spoke to Kamsa, and he didn't give him transcendental knowledge. He said, you better watch your backside. But the eighth child of Devaki is over there. Vasudev carried his eighth child over there. Oh, I'm going to kill Vasudev. No. Not Vasudev. His child. That's the one. Go after him. Protect your backside, Kamsa. So, no transcendental knowledge. Depending upon the audience, depending upon the other person, there was a purpose, and Narada speaking the way that Narada spoke, and it was effective. He wanted to hasten Krishna's coming to Mathura and killing Kamsa and all the other demons that he had come for. Prahlad, mention is made of the way that Prahlad spoke to his classmates wasn't the same way that he spoke to others. Although he didn't give details to Shukracharya's sons, Chanda and Amarka, or to his father, but he was very blunt about the misgivings of those who are attached to the temporary and friends and enemies and so forth. Nate vidu svartakatim hi Vishnu. So there's, but my dear father, you won't understand because you're in this attached place. You'll never understand. So, depending upon time, place, and circumstance, one will speak. So that the reference, it's back to the metaphor, the reference is the autumn season. And speaking here of Giri, the mountains, during the rainy season, the mountains are supplying water. After the rainy season, they may or may not supply water. And similarly, jnanis and bhaktas, they may or may not supply knowledge of transcendence, the jnanamrita, the nectar of transcendental knowledge. Angira, when he visited King Chitraketu, he understood Chitraketu can't hear anything. So he didn't give him transcendental knowledge. He gave him the means so that he can be ready to hear transcendental knowledge. The eligibility was not as much attached to the temporary because he was too much attached. He was madly attached. Then the transcendental knowledge opportunity came. So Angira, then Narada, then Bhakti. So I was thinking about this style in this chapter. It's taking things directly from nature and making a nice comparison to a life of transcendence or a spiritual path, so to speak. When Prabhupada began visiting Japan, he used the same approach because culture in that part of the world is very much connected to nature, and through nature seeing finer sentiments and finer elevated thought and wisdom within nature. It's just part of the culture. So the I did a little research, and the lady, Light of the Bhagavat, the lady that did the illustrations, somehow he got her reference. I don't know the history, but the lady was from China, and it was for Japan. But it, of course, it now in China, they also have the Light of the Bhagavat in Chinese, and it's just little beautiful images. And anywhere you travel in China, there's these similar style as this traditional lady does. And it means something besides, you know, a picture that catches the eye. It's just part of the, I've learned this, it's part of the culture of people in China and Japan, that there's serene music and serene visual images and serene dance and so forth that's meant to inspire finer sentiments. And of course there's not God-centered consciousness, but mode of goodness, at least consciousness, and, you know, higher consciousness than the lower consciousness variety. So the Bhagavatam, it's right there in the Bhagavatam. Of course, the Bhagavatam is taking us to Bhagavan. And the Eastern wisdom literature takes you not to Bhagavan. There isn't really a conception. There isn't really a conception of Bhagavan. Although there is an idea of propitiating someone higher, certainly in Buddhism, they propitiate Buddha. But Buddha isn't God. He's a person who became enlightened. So looking up to elders and seniors and wise people, that's part of culture. But where does it all go? That's a whole other question. It's there in the Bhagavatam. It's right here in this section, like verse after verse after verse, and other places also, where the visuals of scenes in nature are pointed to inspire higher sentiments and higher thinking and higher consciousness, ultimately, of course, resting in the personality of Godhead. That's where everything is going in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The personality of Godhead is the source of everything. So there's things here in nature, there's things over there in human society, and the two can be compared between nature and human society and elevated status of human society. And it's all that elevation of consciousness and refined sentiments, etc. It's all for one purpose, to carry one closer to Krishna. This is just some appreciation of the diversity of Srimad Bhagavatam's presentation. See if there's some discussion on this morning's topic. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. Ultimately, to know when to cross that line, when to not cross that line that you were mentioning, there has to be some indication from within, super soul, intuition.
Yeah.
But I was wondering for those of us who are like, let's say, younger preachers and people trying to spread Krishna consciousness, are there some external symptoms that we can observe?
Are there what?
External symptoms?
External symptoms?
That we can observe in people that might indicate that, okay, they're ready to learn more and be given more.
Well, external. Smile. Eyes. You know, the lights on instead of the lights out. I guess another is ask a lot of questions before you speak. And based upon the answers to those questions, that's external, you can get a sense of what's inside by what comes out. Just ask a lot of questions. Now, your service and the service of book distribution, of course, you know, cultivation of people and book distribution are not, because book distribution is quick. And there has to be, you know, the super soul factor of saying, this is going to be appropriate and if, of interest, and that's not. Of course, we learn by experiment, by experience. But longer term, for someone to go further and further, it's ask a lot of questions. Even a book distribution, what are you interested in? I mean, essentially, the language may be different, but that's, you know, you want to touch on something that they're interested in. So you say something that they're interested in. You find out what they're interested in, speak something. That's Prabhupada's a principle, at least, of book distribution. Bhagavatam includes everything, so whatever someone's interested in, it's in the Bhagavatam. It's in our Vedic wisdom. So ask questions. And that'll give you an indication, including the eyes and the smile and the words, body language. But even with body language, sometimes somebody does it, you know, comes back around. They leave, they come back, saying, you know, tell me something more about that, that was interesting, or whatever it is. So, super soul factor can't be discounted by any means. And if we're tuned in, you're more likely to see the external symptoms than not. You know, it's lots of variety out there. Anything else? Yeah.
I have a question from yesterday.
Question from yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
You were talking about not how one should not be doing things mechanically, and that helps to advance in spiritual life.
Yes.
And I was thinking, what are some of the checkpoints that can help me say where I'm doing things mechanically, and at that point how to move from there to
say, nice question.
Not be in a mechanical space.
Well, something that I like, you've heard probably many times, you pause. You go into this reflective pause space, mode of goodness. And, you know, self-honesty, here's where I am, here's where I want to go. And then, so as soon as that mode of goodness is there, it opens it's the door for illumination and the signal from Supersoul, how to move into a heart space instead of a mechanical space, the door is open. And so you check in with Krishna and just practice that, and it comes more from the heart than the mechanical. Now, there's philosophical things that can be helpful, specifically the something that I like is Rupa Goswami's Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. The core of any spirit soul's existence, mind or anyone, is the intention to please Krishna. So that's the heart. So instead of being in the mechanical behavior thing, it's the intention to please Krishna. That's who I am. That's me. So you try to connect with who you are from the spiritual perspective, not just, you know, the covering perspective. Now, you don't deny the covering feature. It's going to come out through, you know, the covering that you have. But the intention to please Krishna is who you really are. So when you see, because that's what I understand your question is, when you recognize, here I am, mechanical again, how to, so pause and check in with who you really are. And what will be, in this circumstance, rather than the behavior that's mechanical, what would be pleasing to Krishna? It doesn't mean you have to change the behavior, but the consciousness behind the behavior. And practice chanting like that. Because if you practice chanting like that, that consciousness, the non-mechanical consciousness, can become awakened. Because otherwise chanting is mechanical. Very easy to get into mechanical mode with chanting or with life. So through chanting, that's our primary means of awakening our dormant Krishna consciousness. Okay. Janmashtami, I see something stirring over there.
It seems if devotees, if they're overriding consciousness in dealing with others is one of respect and compassion,
yeah,
then naturally there'll be the sensitivity that's required to, it will come easier if we're just thinking, I really want to help this person, and I respect his position, you know, where he's at, and I want to help him further along in his development in Krishna consciousness. That was just a thought that occurred to me, you know, that...
In response to her question.
Yeah.
Well, let me comment on your comment. My experience is, without the spiritual perspective, respect and compassion is misdirected and tenuous. It's circumstance-based, and when the right circumstance isn't there, respect and compassion isn't there, because it's not spiritually based. I mean, doesn't mean don't be respectful and don't be compassionate, but grounded in a spiritual conception. So that's, you know, compassion is natural for someone who understands who they are. Respect is natural because over there is another living entity that's imperfect like me. So how do I respect that other living entity that's imperfect? Well, because I'm not paying so much attention to I'm imperfect, I'm paying attention to they're imperfect, and my respect goes out the window. Or it's tenuous. It's
One other thought, you know, in terms of, it kind of goes back to yesterday's class and this point that you made, that if we are focused on pleasing Krishna, then it's so much easier to access his mercy.
Yes.
It just comes with that.
Yes, yes.
There's one really nice Bhagavatam class, I think that it was in Ahmedabad, that Prabhupada gave, and he spoke about how if he gave an analogy that the servants of the king, their job is to please the king.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, as devotees, our responsibility is just to try to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. And when Krishna's pleased, then we're pleased. They go together.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.